argument is Whiteley against Maravich. Mr. Waterfield.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Mark Waterfield, an attorney with Benish Dan Pekar on behalf of the appellants. Your Honor, the state of Indiana has a strong public policy, as does the state of New York, that employees should be paid timely. And when those employees are not paid timely under Indiana law, liquidated damages accrue.
I have to say, this is the weirdest argument I've ever seen. You're saying
and
that
that's a
court,
high standard.
You're saying that a court can take provisions from two statutes and create its own statute. I don't understand that. I mean, presumably, in both states, New York and Illinois, there's a legislative process, interest groups fight it out, there's a compromise and so on, and that compromise, you know, represents the balance of political force, and that's what you get. Well, if you take a provision from each of the statutes and use that as a basis for a decision, you're creating a statute which has never gone through the legislative process.
Well, I beg to differ, Your Honor. New York.
It opens up vistas of judicial. I mean, it's delightful. It would be delightful. You know, we could do any. We could create our own statute book. Right?
We're not trying to do that at all, Your Honor.
Oh yes, you are. You're creating a hybrid statute, right?
If we look
attorney's at fees from one statute and hitting shareholders from the other.
Well, if we look at the language of the New York statute, what my clients have accrued as of about Christmas of 2006.
You can argue for the New York statute, the Illinois statute. What I do not see is arguing for pieces of both.
Well, Your Honor, as of about Christmas of 2006, my clients had a debt. They were owed a debt by their employer. That debt was related to their wages. They earned that money. And it accrues under the Indiana statute at about 10% per day.
Well, why couldn't you have sought liquidated damages against the corporation under Indiana law and unpaid wages against the top 10 shareholders under New York law?
Well, Your Honor, we did seek liquidated damages against the corporation, but that was wiped out in bankruptcy. And so the corporation and these shareholders worked employees. They had them work and refused to pay them, knowing they were filing bankruptcy, knowing they were going out of business. So in around Thanksgiving of 2006, these employees are working, and they're not getting their last 2 weeks' wages. So then under Indiana law, they're not paid timely under Indiana law, and a 10% penalty per day accrues to where it is a 200% liquidated damages penalty. And then if we look at the clear language of the New York statute, the New York legislature has said if you are a New York corporation, your top 10 shareholders are personally liable for all debts related to the wages. This is a debt related to the wages.
But now you're arguing under the New York statute. You're not arguing your hybrid theory.
Well, Your Honor, absolutely. The New York statute, I think, is quite clear. This is a debt.
Does the New York statute give you all the relief you want?
The New York statute does not give us the liquidated damages, but this company decided to incorporate in New York and then employ individuals in Indiana.
But forgive
no
me.
One forced them to do that.
Forgive me for a moment.
Yes.
Because now I'm even more confused. What? Okay, let me think. What support do you have for your contention that the term debts in the New York statute includes subsequent judgments against the corporation for the liquidated damages that you could have gotten under the Indiana law?
It is a debt because they chose to employ people in Indiana. knowing that we have a treble damages wage claim statute. It did not require a debt. Judgment. It did not require a judgment.
I mean, bless you, but I don't want to hear it is a debt. I want to hear what support you have for this argument.
Well, I think it's a common Webster's Dictionary of the term debt. This company was indebted to those employees.
Well, has some New York court said that for the purpose of the New York statute, debt includes penalties under other state statutes?
No, that question has not arisen under New York.
That's really what you need.
Well, we'd love to have a case on all four, there's no doubt. But sometimes...
I think you'd settle for a case on twos rather than four.
I understand.
But you're not arguing... you're not asking us for a novel interpretation of New York law. You're asking us for relief under both New York and Indiana law.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
Yeah, but that's the problem.
Well, but that is the problem with incorporating in New York and employing people in Indiana.
That's not a problem. Companies do that all the time. Obviously, state of incorporation is often different from the state of where their plants are.
And if they do that, they have to comply with the law in both states. If they had manufactured a product in New York...
They have to comply with the law in both states, but they don't have to comply with a hybridization of the law of both states.
Well, they could have incorporated in Delaware. They could have incorporated in any number of states that would not have had those protections, but they chose otherwise. They chose a state...
My goodness, you'd have everything happen in Delaware.
Well, there we are.
Under your theory.
If that had happened, we would not be here. We would not be discussing liquidated damages. But we have a strong public policy in Indiana that employees are paid timely, as obviously they do in New York as well. And these employees were not paid timely, and they're still waiting some 4 years later.
The kind of wage payment law that Indiana has is very common. I would be shocked if New York doesn't have a similar law. And that's what led to my question. Has any New York court held that debt, for purposes of the New York law, includes penalties?
Yep.
Plenty of opportunity. I would wager a large sum that there are penalties for late payment of wages under New York law.
The one case is the New Jersey case that we cited, in which New Jersey court cited the New York case, the New York statute, and applied that as well. And so that is the one case, but this is a novel theory, there's no doubt. But nonetheless, it is very vitally important that we pay our employees on a timely basis. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Waterfield. Mr. Wagner.
May it please the Court. My name is David Wagner. I represent the defendants' appellees in this matter. With respect to this hybridization claim, I think under either approach, this claim fails. As the judge pointed out, you cannot combine portions of two states' law to create a new cause of action. I think that's fairly self-evident, and our brief discusses that. Even under the other approach, that he might argue that Section 630 on its own should be interpreted to have debt include liquidated damages and attorney's fees, the law clearly precludes that, and there's a number of reasons for that. First of all, as you acknowledge, there's no precedent in New York law or any other state's law that would allow plaintiffs to combine two states' law to create this new cause of action. Plaintiffs have admitted as much in their reply brief. Secondly, New York courts have strictly construed Section 630. In fact, a court has held that any doubt as to the application of 630 should be resolved in favor of the defendant. And New York courts have also limited the scope of 630's application, finding that an employee cannot recover for a deposit made with the corporation.
Could I real quick ask you a question that I was wondering about? If an employee had a discrimination claim against the corporation and the court entered judgment in her favor, mm-hmm. would the judgment constitute a debt under the New York statute at issue here and thus subject the 10 top shareholders?
Well, the debt under the statute applies for unpaid wages, so I guess it would depend what that judgment was for. If it was related to work that she had done, service performed for the corporation, then yes, I believe it would be.
Since 1991, it's been possible to award compensatory damages for a violation of Title VII. So how would New York law treat a judgment that represented in part back pay and in part compensatory damages?
Right. Well, again, the portion that would be compensatory, I think, would be considered wages. But Section 630 requires that the plaintiffs first exhaust against the corporation.
I don't think you know what compensatory damages mean under Title VII. It means things like pain and mental suffering.
Then in that case, no, I don't believe that it would fall under Section 630.
Different from lost wages.
Correct. Sorry. So under 630 is only for services performed for the corporation. Compensatory damages would not fall under that then.
Well, what about the back pay?
The back pay, I think in that hypothetical, the employees would be suing the company itself, in which case they could recover from the company. Under Section 630, you can only recover from the top 10 shareholders.
I don't think so. I mean, these wage laws are designed for, you know, companies that are stiffing workers. They owe them the money, they don't pay it. Back pay under Title VII is compensation for someone who was, you know, improperly terminated or wasn't hired, improperly terminated or demoted or not promoted, and so on. And that's not an employer who's refusing to pay a wage. That has nothing to do with it, right? He's not trying to get the person's work without paying him the wage, which is the vice that is punished by these wage laws.
Well, presumably under Title VII, a lawsuit brought under Title VII, the defendant would be the employer, the corporation, not the shareholders. So in that case, they could recover from the corporation because the defendant is the corporation in that hypothetical. Under Section 630,
Judge Rovner's question was the status of a judgment. Does a judgment arising out of a wage claim suit then become a debt for which the 10 shareholders are liable?
Right, and it would depend what the substance of that judgment is. And under Section 630, those employees can only go after the top 10 shareholders after they've exhausted their attempt to recover from the corporation itself. This is a very limited exception to
the... Right, suppose they've done that. The judgment is uncollectible against the corporation, but there it is, it's a judgment. So can they get the 10 shareholders to pay it because it's a debt?
Again, assuming it was related to services performed by them for the corporation, then presumably if they met the exhaustion requirement of Section 630, then yes.
When you say presumably, I assume it means you actually don't know what New York law provides. Have state cases addressed this question?
I think the question would be, what is the actual debt?
Have state cases addressed this question?
They've addressed it in a number of circumstances. Like I said, one was not on this exact point, but on whether or not a deposit made with the corporation was a debt. The court said no. And then also whether breach of an employment contract.
Sounds like your answer is no. State cases have not addressed the question how back pay under Title VII or the National Labor Relations Act is classified for the purpose of
Section 630. Not that precise question.
All right.
And finally, I think in addition to these New York cases, the statute itself, as we've discussed, says that it must be for debts, wages, or salaries for services performed for the corporation. Obviously, liquidated damages and attorney's fees are not for services performed for the corporation. As to the second point on appeal here, which regards the district court's denial of the motion to remand, I think it's important to note that on that point, the case had been litigated for over 2 years at the time of the motion for remand. And at the time of that motion, all the claims in the case had been dismissed. So there was nothing left to remand at that point. And the district court recognized that in its order, stating that, quote, a remand would treat as a nullity the parties and the court's efforts to resolve the claims. And I think the court has it exactly right there. And the plaintiffs have admitted as much as well, that no claims were left before the court at the time of their motion to remand. Finally, I think as a practical matter, even were they to succeed on the motion to remand, they've just asserted that they want to reassert claims for liquidated damages and attorney's fees. Those claims have already been resolved by the district court, so presumably that would be barred by collateral estoppel or res judicata principles. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll cede the remaining portion of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Waterfield?
Briefly, Your Honor, looking at the text of the New York statute, if those wages are for services performed for the corporation, then yes, there is personal liability to those top 10 shareholders. And so to answer the question that was asked, Mr. Wagner, I believe that...
The last question that was asked is whether any state case had addressed this topic. Do you think a state case has addressed this question?
I do not, Your Honor.
Well, then your answer is no.
Correct. No. With respect to the remand issue, under 28 U.S.C. 1447C, if at any time before final judgment it appears that the district court lacks subject matter jurisdiction, the case shall be remanded. This case is one under state law. It is related to the liquidated damages spelled out under Indiana law. And for that reason...
The district court didn't lack subject matter jurisdiction. The removal was based on ERISA. I thought everybody agreed that it was properly removed under ERISA. Once the ERISA claims have been cleared up, that doesn't mean the district judge lacks subject matter jurisdiction. We're in the domain of 1367C, which says after the federal issues are resolved, the district judge has discretion. Now, when was the first time you asked the district judge to exercise that discretion to remand the state law issues?
I believe our motion for remand was August of 2009, Your Honor.
It was after the district judge had already decided the state law issues.
That is after his decision on the motion to dismiss.
Weird exercise of discretion, first to decide the state law issues and then to remand them, wouldn't it?
I understand, Your Honor. In conclusion, we believe that Your Honors should construe the New York statute and Indiana statutes together and to find the defendants personally liable for the liquidated damages set out under Indiana law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement. The next case for